before.
What's his name's on a busting down my door.
Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to Picks and Pours, episode 8, where my buddy Matt the Mechanic will make some picks for the upcoming UFC card, and I will ridicule him for them. Thank you for joining. If you're live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, also live for the moment on Instagram, just temporarily, because I wanted to give away the answer to yesterday's Two Truths and a Lie. Before I do that, let me introduce my co-host, Matt the Mechanic. Matt, how you feeling, my man?
Pretty good. Just got in some gi jiu-jitsu in this Florida winter weather we got going on. Ready to make some picks.
It was like 50 degrees this morning. It's wild for Florida.
Oh, I got to wear sweatpants.
I got to unplug. Yeah. You wore sweatpants today.
No, I'm wearing sweatpants right now. It's a very rare thing.
In your house?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, before we get to the picks or anything else, I put a post on Instagram and YouTube and a couple other places yesterday where I gave two truths and a lie. I actually wanted to see if you knew the answer. So I just put three bullet points, and they were as follows. And it's information about me. One is that I once ran the New York City Marathon. Two is that I was an all-state wrestler in high school. And three is that I am a former middle school teacher. Do you know which one is the lie, Matthew?
I know you've ran a marathon. I'm not sure what marathon, but I'm pretty sure you've ran a marathon.
Okay.
You were a teacher. I've heard you say you're a teacher. I don't know what you taught. And you were a wrestler. You're a good wrestler from my perspective, but
those are all true statements.
It's not saying much. So I'm going to go with the wrestler.
That's the lie?
Yeah.
You are correct. So I did wrestle in high school. I was not all state. I was not a very good wrestler. I didn't become a better wrestler until I started training MMA, and I started training with Division I wrestlers from Penn State and elsewhere. So, that's the lie. I ran the New York City Marathon in 2015. It took me 5 hours and change to run it, but I finished it, and I was indeed a former middle school teacher. I was not an all-state wrestler. However, my other sport in high school was lacrosse. I was an all-state lacrosse player.
Marathon fun? Is it worth it?
It's horrible. I enjoyed it, and it was cool at the end because, like, all these strangers are cheering for you. And, like, you make it to the end, and you just feel so accomplished. And then it made me hate running, though, because I used to
enjoy... Why don't you have one of those stickers on your car, you know, the 26-point whatever?
I had the medal here somewhere.
I used to run cross-country in high school, and that was a 5K. I mean, granted, it was in all-weather terrain.
Yeah.
It was terrible. The only time was fun when, like, we'd get in the woods and we could, you know, away from the crowds, and you could shove people into the trees and, you know, you couldn't, weren't supposed to, but that goes on. You'd shove somebody in the pond or.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I like that. I like off-road stuff. I like running in the woods and things like that. But yeah, 26 miles is just, it's just too long. Like,
yeah.
I used to enjoy a good, like, 3 to 5 mile run. Be a great way to, like, clear my head. But ever since I ran the New York Marathon, I have hated running. And I've tried to get back into it. It used to be, like, a great way for me to get cardio, road work, whatever you want to call it. But I hate it. And so that's it. That was the lie. I was not an all-state wrestler in high school. And that was kind of the trick, because I'm always posting, you know, all these takedown videos and stuff. And a lot of it is things that I've learned in my 13 years or whatever doing MMA. I do remember some things from high school. I was just like, I was an extremely late bloomer. So I was like still short and stocky in high school, obviously. So I wrestled at 138 pounds, but I'd be wrestling guys that were like 6 feet tall, and I wasn't grown into my body. So I was just not good. So lacrosse was my primary sport in high school, and I got pretty good at that. And then the wrestling would kind of come later.
Speaking of wrestling, how do you have any tips on the deal with a fresh jiu-jitsu student that just happened to wrestle all through college? We have my version of Bo Nickel that I've been dealing with.
Wow.
It's rough.
Well, before I answer that question, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody on Instagram Live.
Oh, bye.
Thank you for tuning in. My first Instagram Live. If you want to catch the rest of the show, come on over to YouTube and make sure you're subscribed and come catch the rest of the show. Come hang out. All right. Cheers. So it's weird. It's weird to think about, like, all right, how do you deal with a wrestler, right? What level of wrestling does he have?
He wrestled for, I've never heard of the college, but I mean, he's got full blown cauliflower ear, you know, about 190 pounds.
Oh boy.
Yeah. It's fun.
Like 190 pounds. Good shape. Is he a young guy?
Oh, yeah. 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 Yep. Yeah, yeah. In shape.
Is he like fresh out of college?
I think he's got a couple of years out of college. He's probably, I mean, is 26-ish maybe.
Yeah.
You know how I deal with it? He's gonna be my friend.
that's a good plan. Is this his first jiu-jitsu gym?
I haven't talked to him much. Gets me really tired.
But he's a white belt.
Oh yeah, well, white belt, no stripes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. He definitely has some grappling experience.
So our old coach, Jeff Bailey, said, he told me once, like, if you're a Division I wrestler, you should start at blue belt. And I kind of agree with that. Like, there's nothing anybody below a blue belt is going to be able to do against a Division I wrestler. Like, it just, like, if a Division I wrestler or even any collegiate level wrestler goes into a jiu-jitsu tournament as a white belt, that's so unfair. Like, you have people who, you know, that guy has hundreds of grappling matches under his belt going against somebody that's never competed in grappling before. It just doesn't.
I think
seem...
if he competes in white belt, it is fair in the gi. And then in no gi, you'd have to, you know, they have a formula where it's, I think, 2 years of wrestling equals 1 year of your experience.
Oh, yeah, because the no gi goes by experience and it's not by belt level anymore for a lot of the tournaments. As far as how to deal with him, I mean, you know, get good at your guard attacks. Wrestlers are really, really susceptible to guillotines and triangles.
Leg attacks.
Yeah. Leg locks, although, you know, manipulating the leg of a wrestler can be a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, you're very strong legs.
But yeah, when I was starting out and I was, you know, my main thing was I would take guys down, right into triangles. I got triangled left and right. I was like the Chael Sonnen of my first, jiu-jitsu gym. So
it should be fun. It's definitely a level up in, training partners. It's
The other thing is, wrestlers will tend to give up their backs a lot because
turtle, just like you. That's weird.
Yes, because in wrestling, you don't want to be on your back because that's where you can instantly lose. So wrestlers will always flop over to their stomachs instinctively, and it's pretty easy to take their backs from there. So get a good back control, work on your triangles, and you know, you should be able to subdue them until they learn some grappling. Once you get a high level wrestler who gets up to like high blue belt, purple belt, like, good luck.
Well, we'll give you a full report next week.
All right. Let's see. Today is Thursday, December 7th. I don't know if I said that earlier or not for those keeping track. Episode number 8, Picks and Pours. I think we're sticking with this title here.
Yeah, it works.
Mark Fellows is on the line here. He says, my favorite analysts. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Well, it's good evening for us, but a very good afternoon to you, sir.
Cheers, Mark.
What are you sipping on there, Matt?
This is not alcohol. I have alcohol for later.
Oh.
I bought this today. I texted you about it. I don't know. I'm going to give you a blind reaction.
Yeah, Whistle Pig.
Whistle Pig. I'm assuming this is their shit one because it was, you know, $30 off, so it only costs $30. But
did you get it at Lukens?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lukens has that sale every now and then on that bottle. I'm not going to say anything else about it, but I wouldn't recommend buying it if it's not on sale.
I figured as much.
But, you know, that it is a good deal that they give on that bottle every now and then. Whistle Pig, it's considered like a high-end whiskey. I'm not going to say any more about it till you try it. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. So today they released on Whiskey Advocate, which is kind of the consensus.
Oh, so the top 10 of the year?
Yeah, so it's the top 20. So they have released they've released 1 through 10. And I'll probably do a full breakdown of the list on Sunday. But Whiskey Advocate is usually it's usually a pretty good list to go by. Like if you're looking for holiday gifts or something for a whiskey drinker, because they're all aware of that list. So if you find something like in the top 10 or the top 5, it's a pretty easy way to show that you put some thought into a gift. However, the top 10 list this year, I was disappointed by it. Pretty much every bottle except for the number one bottle was over $100.
I think that's the way bourbon's going. I know there's inflation, but man, since you started me checking this stuff out, I've noticed prices just go crazy.
Yeah, but these prices are nuts. Like there's a Wild Turkey bottle on there that MSRP is like $275. So like if you're somebody who goes to this list to, you know, buy a Christmas gift for your boss or whatever, you know, you're not going to spend over $100 on a bottle of whiskey. And most of them are scotches this year, by the way, which is another curveball that Whiskey Advocate threw at us.
Maybe they're really trying to sell that number one bottle. It's cheap. You know, everyone's like, I can't afford all this shit. I'm going to buy the cheap one. And it's also the best.
Yeah. Well, that one, it's still $70.
It's a deal over $100.
And it's a scotch, which, you know, unless scotch is such a wide spectrum. It's much wider than bourbon. Like there's sweet bourbons and there's like stronger bourbons and there's a little bit of a spectrum there, but scotch can go from like tastes like an ashtray all the way to it tastes like a sweet port wine. So it's a huge spectrum. You're taking a huge gamble, you know, buying somebody a bottle of scotch because there's so many different types. But yeah, it's weird because last year it was assumed by everybody in the know that the list was bought and paid for because the number one bottle last year was Jack Daniel's Bonded, which is a $30 bottle. I went and tried it. It was okay. It tasted like a $30 whiskey. Definitely wasn't the whiskey of the year. So you have to wonder if these spots on this list have been bought and paid for because it has become like the source for people, you know, who are looking for holiday gifts for people who have whiskey drinkers. So what I'm going to do is this weekend, I'm going to make a video with my recommendations for various bourbons if you're looking for holiday gifts. And I'm going to give different recommendations for different budget ranges.
So whiskey makers out there, make sure to get your money in the bill before he makes his picks.
Yeah, send me some checks if you want your whiskey on this video. So
all right, let's talk about UFC Shanghai.
Yeah,
live from Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's kind of what it's turned into, right?
No, it was supposed to be in Shanghai.
Oh, okay. Is that why there's so many?
I don't know. They haven't released the reason why. If I had to speculate, it was kind of like, you know, when you make plans when you're drunk and then you wake up the next day and you're like, ugh. I didn't want to do that. That's probably what happened.
Yeah. luckily, or unluckily, I'm at the point in the life where all my plans are made for me, pretty much. So I haven't experienced that in quite some time, at least since at least since being a father. Maybe before that, I was still making drunken plans and having to stick to them. But yeah. Okay. So this was supposed to be, was it supposed to be at the training center in China?
Sure. I don't know.
Or just in Shanghai?
Somewhere in Shanghai.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So
we're going to do the main card. I'm going to start at the opening of, we're going to start at the bottom.
Okay. Is that the Kenard Iron Song? Steel. Okay. John Yong Park and Andre Muniz. This is one of the fights that I'm looking forward to the most. So do you have any breakdown or you just have a pick?
John Yon Park minus 180, Andre Muniz plus 140. I'm going to take the Iron Turtle. He's on a four fight win streak with three submissions. If we had this fight 2 years ago, I think Muniz would have much more chance, but I think the Iron Turtle takes this one. It'll be very fun, you know, interesting fight. Don't miss it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a really fun fight. I think the Iron Turtle might have the advantage in the grappling, but Muniz is the better wrestler, in my opinion. And both of these guys hit really hard. I think you're probably making a good pick here. And you said the Iron Turtle is the favorite, right?
Yeah, he's a favorite at minus 180. But we're going to take that one. Mm-hmm. All right, next fight is Nazrat
Hokparast.
Hit it. He's minus 200 versus Jamie Mullarkey. Mullarkey's a replacement for... I don't know who.
Okay, somebody.
But Mullarkey loses by knockout only. And Nasrat's 11 UFC fights. He only has one knockout. So we're going to take the underdog here at plus 155.
Mm. Okay, that's a smart play. So Hokparast tends to grind people out, but...
And you might even look into, I don't know if I can find it, like... To pick Mullarkey by decision, because I think if he's going to win, he's going to win by decision. So let's see.
And yeah, he has a knockout loss to your boy, Jalen Turner. Yeah. I mean, if you're going by that, so both of these guys are grinders, but Mullarkey doesn't get outground, so to speak. Outgrounded. Whatever. You know, yeah. However, Hokparast has lost by decision. So, yeah, I mean, I see how you got from A to B here. And so far, I'm not mad at either of your picks.
Okay, next fight is Tim Elliott versus Sumedergi. He's at plus 105. Tim Elliott made his debut on UFC on Fox 3, May 2012. Mm-hmm. These guys were actually supposed to fight January 2021. I don't know what happened. Elliott took this fight last minute. I'm probably going to take Tim Elliott in this one. Or I am going to take Tim Elliott.
Oh, taking Tim Elliott. And why?
I don't know. I don't even know who the hell this Tibetan Eagle guy is.
The Tibetan Eagle, Sumedergi. So Tim Elliott's coming off of a loss against Makhachev. My concern with him is like all the personal shit he's gone through. And then, you know, his third fight at bantamweight, second fight at bantamweight.
Yes.
So Sumedergi's gonna have a little bit of size, although he was a flyweight at one point as well. Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about, you know, Tim Elliott taking it last minute and all the personal shit. This might be This might be the first one I disagree with you on.
Okay.
All right, co-main event. I love this fight.
Co-main event is Anthony Lionheart Smith at plus 165 versus Khalil Roundtree at minus 220. Yeah, this is a cool fight.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the Anthony Smith's press media interview, and there's a question that he had that really, I think, gives me some insight on this pick.
Let's do it.
As a Chiefs fan, I got to know, what do you think of the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift? Is it real?
I think it's real. I think it's real.
Okay, so it wasn't Taylor Swift that impacts your decision?
No.
Okay.
Short notice fight. Are there some benefits that we don't really take into account? Like when you think of a short notice fight, what are the benefits that you see initially for you?
Well, as long as you're in halfway decent shape, there's a lot of benefits. I didn't take the day-to-day, two and three times a day pounding on my body that he just went through. I feel really fresh and relaxed and like excited. Whereas sometimes when you get through a long camp, you're just trying to fucking get through it. You know, you're just trying to like 5 weeks there and you're like every day drags and you just want the fight to be there and hurry up. Like I'm not in that position mentally where I'm just wishing that it was over, you know? Maybe that sounds like it's not that big of a deal, but it absolutely is.
So I was thinking about that. What's your thoughts on short notice of fights and when can it be beneficial to a fighter?
It's beneficial to a fighter, like he said, that's staying in shape. You know, I'm always telling guys, fight camp is not for getting in shape. Fight camp is for getting sharp and for preparing for a specific opponent. You know, you're upping the amplitude of training, or, you know, you may be getting an extra session in and probably beating up your body a little bit more, but like outside of camp, you should not be getting totally bloated like Patty the Batty or, you know, like Eddie Alvarez was notorious for doing, especially if you want to get big opportunities like fighting in a co-main event. You have to be ready for these things if you're going to be at this level. So that's the benefit. Like you're in shape, but you're not beating the shit out of your body. Now,
what about mental side of it?
Yeah, the mental side of it, it depends on the fighter. Like for someone like Michael Bisping, who is good friends with Anthony Smith, it was great for him to come into the Luke Rockhold fight, and he had really nothing to lose to the point where Luke Rockhold was falling asleep during his warm-up in the back because he was so disconcerned with Michael Bisping, being that he had beaten him. And you know, Bisping was able to go in there feeling so free.
But Khalil's back at in Thailand training, which he seems to have a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Much. I mean, that I just before we started, I watched this last fight where he just soccer kicked that dude. Or remember that? Oh.
Yes.
This fight's odds started with Anthony Smith at the minus 200 favorite, which then I was like, okay, we're taking Roundtree. But
yeah, that would have been a good time to bet on Roundtree.
Now he's I don't know. I'm leaning towards Lionheart at this time.
Okay,
but I'm not too confident with this pick.
All right, so let's put this into perspective a little bit. What's a major weakness of Anthony Smith that he's had like glaringly obvious in his last few fights? Can you think of it?
No. Probably if I had to guess what you're about to say, he probably takes damage in close.
He doesn't check leg kicks.
Oh.
And that is a major tool in Khalil Roundtree's arsenal. He actually TKO'd a guy with a leg kick with an oblique kick, blew his knee out.
So you're saying I should probably change this.
So without a fight camp to prepare for a guy who specializes in the thing that has been your weakness in your last few fights, I would say Anthony Smith is at a big disadvantage here. I also saw Josh Thompson talking on the Weighing In podcast. He said what Anthony Smith has to do is get this fight to the ground, which I agree with, but he said he shouldn't try and wrestle Khalil. He should try and put him up against the cage and foot sweep him, which would also be a mistake because Khalil's been spending a lot of time in Thailand where they spend a lot of time on the Thai clinch, and Khalil Roundtree has an excellent Thai clinch. He's not a guy you're going to get up against the cage and be able to just foot sweep. In fact, he'll probably do it to you and kick the shit out of your legs on the way down.
Well, I hope he doesn't do it to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, all that being said, like, we know Anthony Smith has a hard time checking the leg kicks. That's not something you might even be able to fix with an entire fight camp to prepare for a guy who specializes in that. And now coming in on short notice, it wouldn't take a wizard to predict the game plan of Khalil Roundtree going into this fight, which is going to be take Anthony Smith's legs out from underneath him and drag him into deep water, banking on the fact that his cardio is not going to be good because he's taking this fight on short notice. All that being said, Anthony Smith has like three or four times the amount of experience as Khalil Roundtree. There's nothing that Roundtree's going to be able to do to him that Anthony Smith hasn't experienced before.
Yeah, he has 37 wins to Khalil's 12.
Yeah, so I'm at the point in this one where my brain says Khalil Roundtree must win this fight, but there's something in my gut that says Anthony Smith is going to capitalize on this situation because he tends to be the worst in the fights that he's supposed to win. So if he's a bit of an underdog going into this, you know, that's kind of where he shines.
And his press conference, he's all talking about, headed for the, once a title shot, you know, he has a plan. So I'll stick with Lionheart.
Yeah, I mean, and if he has an impressive performance here, he's got a little bit of heat with the champ, Alex Pereira. So that's definitely a possibility for sure.
All right, main event.
Yep.
Yadong Song, minus 375 versus Chris El Guapo Gutierrez.
Gutierrez, yeah.
Plus 275. So this is Yadong's third main event. He's got knockout wins against Marlon Moraes, recently Ricky Simon, beat Chito Vera.
Mm-hmm.
Guapo, he's got some really good fights. He's got, comes to mind is when he knocked out the, who was that?
Frankie Edgar.
Ugh. I haven't made a pick yet, Bill.
Okay.
Everything's telling me to pick Song, but
yeah,
you think Guapo's got a chance?
He definitely has a chance, but if you consider the fact that this card was supposed to take place in Shanghai and they're putting him, you know, a guy from China in the main event, obviously, you know, they're trying to give him the platform here, give him a little bit of a boost.
All right. Well, we've taken two underdogs, so we'll stick with the heavy favorite on this one.
All right. Just to recap, who's everybody you're going with here?
So it'll be Yadong Song, Lionheart.
Okay.
Tim Elliott.
Okay. Malarkey.
Malarkey and the Iron Turtle.
All right. Are you able to plug these in to see what a parlay would pay out for all of your picks?
I can do that on DraftKings. Yep. But while you do that, why don't you talk about any other fights you want?
Yeah. So the only you know, like I said, the only ones I kind of disagree are you know, like I said, with the co-main event, my brain says Roundtree especially since he specializes in Anthony Smith's weakness that's been exposed in his last few fights. And then, you know, Suma Deraji and Tim Elliott. I just don't know where Tim Elliott's head is at. He's been doing this a long time, like you said, since 2012. And just with all the things he's been through. And then the rest of this card, fairly unknown fighters. I am interested in Luana Santos and Stephanie Egger. So that's a bantamweight fight. And I've been advocating since Misha Tate's win that she rematches Holly Holm at UFC 300. Because for right now, we don't know anything that's going on with UFC 300, right? There's just rumors.
Yeah, there's rumors. I mean, I think some people came out and said that they're on it, but nobody important.
Right.
You go by what Brandon Schaub says, it's Nick Diaz versus GSP.
No, that's not happening. That's not.
Who knows?
Is GSP even in the USADA pool? Which I guess it doesn't matter because they're not using USADA anymore. But so I guess they won't be able to announce that until January when USADA is done.
I don't know. I don't know who, but it's got to be something crazy. I mean, he's got to pull something out.
Yeah, I mean. We know Jim Miller will probably be on that card since he's fought at UFC 100 and UFC 200. So his request is to fight at UFC 300. And I imagine they'll grant him that. Yeah, I think Misha Tate and Holly Holm rematching would be a great way to kick off the main card of UFC 300. It was such a great fight the first time. You know, Holly Holm was dominating the fight, and then at the last minute, Misha Tate was able to get her back and choke her unconscious for the title. It only makes sense that these two run it back. We don't have a bantamweight champion right now. It's just vacant. It was supposed to be Juliana Pena and somebody, Myra Bueno Silva, I think. And Myra Bueno Silva, I believe, got caught with some things she shouldn't have had. So that fight's off. So we have a vacant title. Fuck it, man. Let's do Holly Holm and Misha Tate for the vacant title at UFC 300.
And you're saying that's for the... Should open the main card.
Well, I just decided now that it should be for the title. Initially, it was going to be a 3-round fight, but
so then you're going to put that in the co-main of UFC 300.
It wouldn't necessarily have to be the co-main if you have three title fights.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a title fight, a big title fight next week. I'm sure they could. You know, that one, there's a lot of big fights we could have. It's, you know, it's weird that UFC 300, you know, you start talking about that and then we start talking about fighters that haven't fought in 5 years. Like, why do we care about that? Like, wouldn't you want the best fights? But I think it's the nostalgia thing.
Because who else do you have in that women's bantamweight division that has any name recognition?
Well, I was talking about the card as a whole, not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought maybe that weight class would go away, but what the hell do I know?
No, it's not going to go away.
Do you want to do a couple news? Well, first, a $10 parlay would pay $253 on DraftKings. That's not possible on our Hard Rock Bet app, which I'm still waiting for the people to get a hold of us.
Yeah, let's go. Sponsor us.
The Jamie Mullarky fight is not on there. It seems they don't like if a fight scraps, they don't put it on there week of. And then on DraftKings, you can only pick the fight, just the outcome. You can't pick any over unders, finishes. They just offer a straight up bet.
All right. So that's, I mean, that's pretty good. So if you throw $100 on this parlay, you win yourself $2,000.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, I don't know. Mark Fellows might have a big pocket or something, but I don't know. I don't even know if they can bet over there.
I mean, you got deep pockets after if you throw $100 and you win $2,000.
Sure do.
That you could almost buy the top 10 whiskeys, according to Whiskey Advocate, with $2,000. Let's get into some news.
There hasn't been much. With Colby Covington's fight coming up, he did an interview with Brett Accomato from Mar-a-Lago.
Okay.
There really wasn't much. It was just a lot of Colby stuff, but he did have this, and this was, I thought, interesting.
What have you been doing, and has it been tough not fighting for 18 months?
It's been extremely tough because as soon as I got done with that fight with George in March, I went backstage to Hunter Campbell backstage, and I said, Hunter, I want to fight again in June or July. Get me back in there. I need to fight. Like, I'm in my prime right now. I want to go capitalize. They were looking at setting up that fight with that motherfucker, Khamzat Chimaev. But he's unprofessional. He's a clown. He's out there laughing when he's missing weight by 10 pounds, making a fool of this publicly traded, beautiful company of the UFC, making a fool laughing while you're ruining their main event pay-per-view. So he's not accountable. He's not someone they can trust in that spotlight. And they gave him the easiest fight in the division. A guy, the soy boy, the washed up Nate Diaz that shouldn't even be fighting anymore. The guy can't even talk straight. He's not even coherent anymore. They gave him the easiest fight to set up to get this big money fight with Colby Chaos Covington. He couldn't pass the test. He was afraid, plain and simple. So he ran away from me to middleweight. And, you know, it sucks because they were trying to set that fight up. So that's what's been the delay is other fighters not agreeing to the fights and not doing business for the UFC.
So it's like, it seems like the narrative of Colby not fighting had to deal with this lawsuit. But he's saying nobody wanted to fight him.
Yeah, I mean,
I really wanted to see that Chimaev fight, watching what Chimaev's done recently, I will have a little more confidence with Colby.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen. I think they're gonna have him stay at middleweight. So.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he hasn't been fighting because of the lawsuit, but, you know, that's not the narrative he's choosing to go with. I mean, Colby is a guy who, you know, he's following the Chael Sonnen blueprint kind of sloppily.
You should watch this interview, Bill. He's pulling back from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't have, I mean, the Colby that was talking to Brett Accomato was the version of Colby that when I spent a small amount of time with him, how I saw him, like how he acted, not what we see on TV. I mean, there's a little bit. He played up his relationship with Trump, but I mean, he's sitting at fucking Mar-a-Lago, so
yeah,
you got to do that.
Sure, you know, Trump's Florida residents. Are you gonna pour that whistle?
I did. I tasted it already. I like it. It's kind of sweet. It doesn't taste like anything. It doesn't taste like a bottle that I'd be excited about, but I don't think I'm upset with $30.
Yeah. So, but you wouldn't pay the $60 that it's usually.
If it was $60, I'd probably be let down. But $30, what the heck?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I'm.
What about Whistlepig in general? I'm sure they have some good stuff. Or are they more of a kind of a name brand type thing?
Yeah, they're a brand that kind of that they put themselves out there as like a boutique whiskey, and their stuff's really expensive. And it just, there's no real reason for it. I mean, it's okay whiskey, but you know, they intentionally price their bottles very high to make it seem like they're a better quality product than they are. I mean, at the end of the day, it's fucking fermented corn. Like, it doesn't.
So this, you're telling me this is a bottle you could, like, if you're going somewhere and you didn't want to spend a whole bunch of money, but you're, you know, you wanted to kind of look a little fancy, this might be the bottle to keep around.
Yeah, for sure.
People don't know, they're gonna be like, Whistlepig, wow. Kind of like walking in with Patron.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
That's a good analogy, because Patron is fucking terrible.
Oh, so you think, okay.
Like, I think Whistle Pig is probably makes a better quality product than Patron if we're comparing whiskey to tequila. But yeah, same idea. You know, it's like, it's good marketing. You know, they have like some really high end bottles that cost like $2,500 for like their Boss Hog whiskey. But like at the end of the day, it's all just like boiled grains that like, it's all the same shit. It's just, you know, is it a cool bottle? And, you know, does the mash bill kind of fit your palate? So that's what it is with whiskey. That's really what it comes down to. Like, some of my favorite whiskeys are not very expensive at all. You know, and I've had very expensive whiskeys before, and it's like, you know, the difference in cost is not that apparent. Speaking of which, Mark Fellows says, sadly, he's got long arms but shallow pockets. So I don't know, Mark. It seems like you're balling, man. Every time I see you on social media, you're in a different country, traveling somewhere, drinking fancy beers. So I think you might be sandbagging us here.
Hey, Bill, did you see the prelims got a new main event for next week?
No, what is it?
I thought it ripped my wiener off. Thinking, man, if this ripped my wiener off, I'm just gonna just die. It's okay, you know, it's whatever. My pants, and I remember seeing my nuts wrapped up, and there was blood and semen leaking, and there was like, I could see a testicle wrapped up, but I was so happy. I mean, it was just like the life was just right back in me.
Because you had a chance.
Because my wiener was there. Oh. And
Frank Mitchell stepped in for, I think it was Giga.
Okay.
He's going to face Josh Emmett as the main event of the prelims, which is a pretty badass fight for the prelims.
For such a great card, yeah.
Oh, the card. I was just looking through. For some reason, this card's been like, oh, I was just looking at it. I can't believe all these fights are so close.
Yeah.
It also makes sense why the fight that opens up the main card is, now I understand why we have so much drama going on.
That's the Ian Garry.
Yeah. I didn't realize that he's fighting in a week. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I listen to Chael Sonnen pretty religiously. And it's all Chael's been talking about. Like he completely ignores the fact that there was a card last weekend and that there's one coming up this weekend. And he just dives right into all the drama.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about the stuff with John Jones and Tom Aspinall?
I didn't really look into that. I saw a headline and I was like, that doesn't seem that cool, but.
Yeah, it wasn't much. It was just Tom Aspinall was like, John Jones should be stripped. And John Jones said, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, and this is the first time I've had to pull out of a fight because I had an injury in a championship camp that required surgery. You know, you should pipe down because I've seen a lot of guys come and go that were supposed to be the next big thing. There's only ever been one John Jones. And Tom Aspinall kind of said, you're right, John. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's what I would say, too. I mean, to me, if he had surgery, and it seems that he has had a surgery, then it wasn't – he didn't pull out of a fight, you know. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I wish he would fight more often, but he's John Jones, and he can do whatever the hell he wants.
I mean, it's probably why he's been so successful, because he's had the time off from, you know, the steroid suspensions and – getting arrested and, you know, all this other stuff, forcing him to take time off and letting his body heal. You know, now it's starting to catch up with him. The torn pectoral muscle is something that we've seen a lot of lately. I saw some pro wrestler, I think Cody Rhodes had that. It seems to be a common injury for people who put on more muscle than their bodies are meant to have. Like, it happened to some NFL players. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean steroids. It probably does. But it's just, you know, you're trying to put more muscle on your body than your body can take.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope he gets whoever John Jones needs to get in contact, whoever's helping Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles 11 weeks ago and is starting this weekend.
Oh.
He totally tore his Achilles. Oh, you know who I really should get in touch with him is what's his name? The guy that just beat the shit out of his brother.
Oh, Jamal Hill.
Didn't he tear his Achilles? I think he tore his Achilles.
Yeah, he did.
He should get in touch with Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know if he completely tore his. Supposedly with the Achilles, it's actually better to completely tear it than it is to rupture it. Like for whatever reason, a rupture is harder to, I don't know. I might be making this up.
Maybe you should get a hold of your doctor friend.
Yeah.
The guy that used to be on this show. What was his name? Wasn't he a doctor?
A doctor?
Yeah. He had a host for a while. Then when the animal stepped out, wasn't he a doctor? He was like a high, or he's a businessman. What was the animal's alter ego that you tried for a while?
Oh, yeah. No, Art Vandelay.
Art Vandelay, yeah.
Yeah, that was.
Don't ask him. What the hell's he know?
That was a Seinfeld reference.
We were talking earlier this week and about one championship, and Autry said they wanted to have 60 or 70 fights.
Yes.
Or events.
Yes.
So I did a little more research into this.
Okay.
And one championship has 127 MMA fighters.
Uh-huh.
And 24 of those didn't even fight this year. So basically 100 fighters.
Okay.
So if they want to do 60 events, they would have to like fight every month. Every fighter would have to fight every month. And they had 52 MMA fights this year.
So it could be.
I think it's they want to have 60 to 70 MMA fights.
You know, obviously there are tons of unsigned fighters out there, especially now that Bellator got absorbed by the PFL. So there's some loose contracts out there. There's some big names, and then they can always recruit MMA fighters. Like they can go to pretty much any state and grab, you know, easily 10 fighters.
But 10 fighters was okay. So that's one event.
Yeah.
But they also, I know they do have like a road to one promotion, kind of like the Dana White's looking for a fight. And maybe they're just going to do a bunch of those fights right. All over Africa or something.
Right. Yeah. And it could be, you know, guys that aren't necessarily under contract, but they're fighting for a contract. They could be doing shows like that. So if they do like a contender series show once a week and they do like an event every other week, you know, that pretty much covers 60 shows in a year.
Yeah, it's just confusing because if he said he's going to do the MMA fights, well, isn't one thing, it's kind of like a bunch of different disciplines on one event. So does that mean they're getting away from that? Which this weekend they do have an event that's all Muay Thai, one championship Muay Thai. So maybe they are splitting it up.
Look, at the end of the day, Chatry's doing his job. His job as a promoter is to get people to talk about his promotion. So even if he's throwing an absurd number out there, just so people are like, well, how does one do this? Because one has this many fighters and one has done this many events last year. How is one going to do, you know, that's his job, to get people talking about that shit. Just like Bare Knuckle, you know, I heard John Anik and Kenny Florian were talking about the Mike Perry, Eddie Alvarez fight. And Ray Longo kind of summed everything up. He was like, yeah, I tuned in to watch those guys fight. He's like, but I don't want to watch anybody else.
Speaking of Ray Longo, what's the last thing I have? I got David Feldman talking about this event.
Let's do it.
He's on Some Guys podcast.
Big event. A lot of eyeballs on it. You said the house was packed. They were going absolutely crazy. Financially, you said you've had trouble with buys and piracy and all this stuff. How did that event look? How are things looking for that angle of the business moving forward?
I mean, we sold more tickets than we ever sold. We made more money at the gate. We sold more internationally. We sold some international pay-per-views. Our sponsors were crazy. Really, really did good. We didn't get all the pay-per-view numbers in yet, but it's kind of looking like about equal to what we did, maybe a little better than what we did at BKFC 41 with Luke Rockhold and Mike Perry. Definitely got pirated. We actually found out we got the company that worked last time and found almost 800,000, found 1.3 million unique IP streamed it. So it just sucks, man. It's good and it sucks, right? Like, I can't keep saying, wow, well, 1.3 million people watch this or 2 million people watch this because they're not freaking paying for it. But, you know, we probably did closer to 100,000 buys.
You know, 100,000, you'd say it's 1.2, but I think they should realize that the pay-per-view model is not for bare knuckle. The model for bare knuckle is the subscription, which I have paid since the first month possible.
Yes,
yeah. $4.
If you got those 1.3 million people to sign up for the subscription, even if that's the only event they watch and they forget they have it, you're still going to make more money than, let's be realistic, 100,000 people did not pay for that pay-per-view. It's probably closer to 50,000, if that. So if those people paid the, whatever it was, $50, I think I got a discount code for $30, being a subscriber. So if you get those 50,000 people to pay that $30 as opposed to getting those 1.3 million people to get that $4 subscription and keep it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, we don't know what their monthly subscription number is. I bet it's not great, but I'd much just add some onto that, you know, make it instead of four, make it $6 and give me the pay-per-views. Just like cut the bullshit. You know, that fight, that card was no better than any of the other fights they put on. It just happened to have a big name on it.
Yeah. Make it $10. And then how many people out of those 1.3 million, instead of trying to find an illegal stream, will just be like, oh, it's just $10. And yeah, they sign up and then they forget they signed up for it because they don't have Rocket Money or whatever the fuck. And they end up paying that $10. And then they're in your system. You got their email. You can market the next fight.
And if they want to do the pay-per-view, you know, want us to pay for pay-per-views, and they need to cut the subscription fee for everything else.
Yeah.
Because I might be more likely. I don't know. I don't, I know you just said it. I don't like it. I don't like this $50 bullshit for bare knuckle fights.
No, especially because, like, you're trying to build a new sport. You know, it's not like it's not like the UFC where people are already on board with what you're doing. It's people still need to be convinced that it's not just a spectacle. They need to be convinced that it's an actual sport. And you can't do that by trying to get them to pay for a $50 pay-per-view. You can get them to pay for a $10 subscription, and then they hold on to it, you know, then you're getting $120 out of that person a year, and you're getting more people. Yeah. I mean, I'm no mathematician, but it seems like a much better strategy, in my opinion. And you're only having a couple of big cards. Like Perry even said, he's only fighting every 6 months, and he's your only big name right now. He's your only draw.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Jorge Masvidal's bare knuckle MMA promotion does well, because they're going the route that it's just free on YouTube, which is kind of, and my algorithm is I watch a lot of MMA stuff on YouTube, and there's a lot of promotions doing that. I mean, almost anytime I open up YouTube in the evening, there's some sort of live fights going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of MMA content out there. You know, we got to get more of those people streaming this show instead of all these small promotions.
Package deal with BKFC and bet.
And the Hard Rock Casino. All right, those are the two we're gonna go after in 2024. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure I've done more bare knuckle interviews than anybody out there. besides like the guy that does the Bare Knuckle podcast, which is what I think you were playing a clip of.
Yeah, that guy and the people that work for the BKFC. But I don't know. We're going to get Dave Mundell that Mike Perry fight. We're still out there doing the fighting the good fight. It's like I feel so weird. I've never I don't comment on social media at all. And every time I get a chance for Dave, I'm putting a comment and it just feels weird, but God damn, we won't need that fight.
Yeah. I mean, I did it too on the, they put out a post. What's your dream fight? I said, Mundell and Perry. And it really is like, it really would be a fantastic fight. You know, I know how it went the first two times they fought in MMA, but that was like damn near 10 years ago. And now Dave is the best bare knuckle boxer in the division, like undisputed. Yeah. So it would make sense. But, you know, I understand the business side of it as well. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I have been talking to Dave and trying to work with him on some other ideas for some big time call outs. You know, guys who may have been released from the UFC recently or retired from the UFC. I would like to see him get a big fight regardless, because he really has cleaned out his division in the BKFC. For those who don't follow regularly, Dave Mundell, who is the middleweight champion, which middleweight in BKFC is 175 pounds because they kind of go by boxing weight classes. He's beaten everybody in the top five except Mike Perry. Mike Perry is the number one contender, but you know, that fight's just not going to culminate for, you know, obvious marketing reasons.
Yeah. For what most people are concerned, it's, you know, Perry's already the champion.
Right. But you can only play that up for so long.
Yeah. But also we can't give Mike Perry too much shit, because if you got me going in there and fighting Eddie Alvarez bare knuckle, you know, or bare knuckle anyone, I want to make as much money as possible, because I mean that's why he's doing that. He's not doing that for glory. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's made it very clear he doesn't care about being the champion. And even Eddie said, like, I'm here for a check. I'm fighting for a check.
Yeah,
because there was a clip. I meant to ask you to grab this clip, but Luis Palomino, who is the
I played him last week.
He's the 155 and 165 champion. He asked if either of those guys would fight them if they won the fight. And Eddie said, you need to talk to your promoter. I'm here for a check. If your promoter is going to pay me the same thing I'm getting paid to fight Mike Perry, he's like, yeah, I'll fight you every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah. You heard that on this your podcast, Bill.
Yeah. But for people who didn't hear that episode,
sorry.
We gotta reiterate, you know. We gotta be a little repetitive on here.
Sorry.
It's all right. You're still new at this.
Yep.
I feel it sometimes. Like, am I being too redundant? And then I'm like, probably whoever's listening to this didn't hear the last thing.
Yeah. And they're definitely not listening at 58 minutes in.
Yeah, not likely. Although Mark Fellows is here. He wants to know if I'm expanding into fighter management. So I do light consultation. I would not. And that's just for my friends. I would not get into being a manager for fighters, and for several reasons. One, it's a cutthroat business. And I've worked in a cutthroat industry before, and I did not enjoy it. And two, for the most part, talking to fighters is like talking to a brick wall. So you could give them all the logic and common sense that you could possibly gather, and they would do nothing with it. And that's why I would not be a fighter manager. Yeah, but
you're going to be a reluctant advisor.
Yeah. For my friends, I'm willing to shoot a text message and say, hey, you should say X, Y, and Z. And sometimes it grabs them some headlines and it helps. Or you should call out this person, or no, you should not take that fight. But, you know, it's just my two cents. It's not a managerial decision by any means.
All right. Well, we'll see how these picks work out. I'm really looking forward to next week's card, though. We're gonna have some fun picks on there. There's some fighters that have some pretty cool clips too, I think.
Oh, good. Yeah, let's get all those together. We gotta figure out how to get the video going.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So let me know if you need access to the StreamYard or whatever. We could talk about that offline.
Yeah.
For anybody who wants to get some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, holidays are coming up, so you might want to get your orders in soon, especially if you live overseas. Our friends at Reaper1.co make all the merchandise, over the top, under the influence, t-shirts, tank tops, and hoodies. You can use the promo code MMARocks10, save yourself 10% on your entire order, whether you are purchasing MMA on the Rocks merchandise or not. And that's all we got. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye. Cheers.